Hello, everybody, and welcome again to Nerd to the Third Power, your one-stop shop for all things nerdy and awesome. I'm your host and Master of Ceremonies, Dr. Gonzo. And with us again, fresh from the fields of battle and covered in the blood of her enemies, is our resident anime goddess, the Cat. Cat, you look like you've just come through the Battle of Westeros.
Oh my god, guys. Don't ever run a convention. It's really hard, guys. It's oh my god. I'm back, though. I survived my convention. It was really rough going there for a while there. So the reason why I took the hiatus was because I was working like 8 hours a day at my day job and then coming home and working on the convention for like 5 hours. And I was like really at my wit's end and had no free time. But the convention was very successful. We had like 6,000 people show up, so holy shit. And now it's over and I'm still super, super tired. Like over a week later, I'm still like, you know, I could go for a nap.
This is your biggest year ever for Anime St. Louis, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. We've had a 500 person growth for the last 2 years. And like 2 years ago, I took over as the guest relations director. So I'm not saying that there's a correlation, but there's totally a correlation. because I've had various positions on the con staff over the many years. I've been working on the con for like 11 years now. Since I took over specifically as the guest relations director, I've been booking what I think is a really good guest list. And I think that's really, in my opinion, contributed to our increase in attendance. But that increase in attendance comes with a lot of its own problems, and having a larger guest list comes with a lot of its own problems, and most of the problems are, oh my god, we have so much to do.
So on the one hand, it's yay, biggest year ever. On the other hand, it's please kill me, never again.
Yeah, so we're like, oh my god, because we're getting ready to re-sign our contract for our venue. And it was absolutely packed. Like, you know, it was noticeably more dense while we were there. Like, people were saying, it feels like there's more people this year just due to everywhere you went. It was just like crowds. And that's such a great problem for us to have, because we had our attendance plateau for many, many years. And we were worried, like, are we ever going to get that attendance up? And you know, if we couldn't get our attendance up, were we going to be able to continue this convention and stuff like that? So having unprecedented growth is really great, but are we going to outgrow our venue is like the terror.
All right. And also with us is Skyblaze. How are you doing?
Well, I've just finished setting up the caffeine drip for Kat.
Thank you. Much appreciated.
Yeah, you're welcome. You looked like you needed it. And I'm going to be heading to a theme park for 2 days, so I'm good.
All right. And Birdman, how are you doing this week?
I'm good.
All right. Good to hear. Well, we got a fun show for you guys tonight. Tonight we're discussing something that I have been really excited for and really looking forward to. This show was for me. It really was. I get so few times to actually talk about something that I'm really passionate about and excited for, and this is one of them. We're talking about Detective Pikachu, a movie that I have been really excited for and really looking forward to, so that's going to be a lot of fun. But of course, there is procedure to follow, so we're going to begin, as always, with Ask a Geek. And Kat, it's kind of fitting that you just come back from an anime con, because we have a question here from Riley for you, and he asks, what is your favorite thing about running an anime convention?
Oh, god, okay, there's like, because I'm on guest relations staff is a little different than the rest of staff, because you spend most of your time with the VIPs, you're hanging out with like voice actors and stuff like that. And so that's what I really like, is getting to socialize a little bit with the people that I really admire. My best moment, pure best moment at Anime St. Louis this year was taking Richard Epcar, who is the voice of Raiden in Mortal Kombat and Ansem in Kingdom Hearts. And I've worked with him at a bunch of shows. And I love working with this guy and taking him out for Korean barbecue one night. Like, nice. To me, that is just like my favorite part, is just getting to like relax for 5 minutes and socialize with somebody while like over a good meal. I love doing that. I also really love, and it's extremely stressful, but I love running autograph sessions. They are not fun to run, but I love seeing how excited the fans are. And that sounds really cheesy, but it is a genuine feeling, because fans get really excited when they get to meet this or that celebrity. We had at our convention this year, Caleb Hiles, who is a YouTube singer, and he's by far one of our most popular guests that we have. And he does a concert for us. He actually does two concerts for us. And after his Saturday night concert, he comes out and there's just a swarm of people who want to meet him. And we have to run a really, really exhausting, like at midnight autograph session for him. And it's worth it because of all of these people who are so excited to meet him and who want to like stand around and ask him questions. And when the guest has enough time and they really, you know, get one-on-one conversations going on, it's really just a magical thing. Because those were experiences that I had as a kid. When I was young, going to conventions, my dad dragging me to Star Trek convention, or when I was young, I got to meet my favorite author, who is Anna Martin, the author of The Babysitter's Club. And I was just absolutely astounded. And that is like what I love to do for other people now.
Okay. All right. Cool. Next question here. This one comes from Dina, and it is for Skyblaze. And you seem to have to open yourself up to something here, Skyblaze, because she asked you, based on your comments that you've been writing fanfic for many years, do you have any work that is available for people to read, and where could they find it?
Yes, I do. Under the pen name Skyblaze, you can actually find my stuff on fanfiction.net and on Archive of Our Own, aka AO3.
Okay, do you have any works that you're particularly proud of that you'd like to shout out?
There's a fic I'm working on with my writing partner Taranea, which is called Advent of Equinox, and it's a Sonic fic, which is a continuation of the story of Sonic Unleashed, only Sonic and Shadow get transformations in this one. Shadow gets wings. It's the obligatory Shadow gets wings story. And there's also several Knight Rider fics, one of which I'm particularly proud of, which is called A Race Through Dark Places. I'm very proud of that, because I think it was quite an emotional piece. But yeah, if you're into, I mean, Knight Rider, Doctor Who, what else have I written? Knight Rider, Doctor Who, Sonic, all sorts of stuff. Feel free to go and check it out. Leave comments if you like it.
So just make sure I got my cards right. This is a Knight Rider and Doctor Who crossover.
I have written one of those, but I haven't posted it because it's not very good.
Please tell me you have a scene where Kid is inside the TARDIS and he reveals that he can speak to it, and the two of them have an argument.
I didn't get that far. It was only very, very short.
Oh, okay. All right. And she's got a second question here. As a connoisseur of fan fiction, do you have any particular favorites that you've read that you'd like to recommend?
Oh, good God. So many. So very many. Fanfiction is one of those things where there is so much of it and so much of it is crap. But what is out there that is good is so good. There are a lot of books out there that are absolute garbage, but there are a lot of books that are fine literature. You can't really judge one by the other. It is very, very difficult to say, you know, this story should have been published because it's fanfic, but there are some which probably should have been. My parting partner Taranea, if you're into Sonic fic, please read Taranea's stuff, because she writes such absolute brilliant stuff.
And if you're listening to this on the YouTube feed, we'll go ahead and put a link below the feed so that you can find anything that we're talking about here.
Oh, absolutely.
So.
Oh God. There's a really good fanfic on fanfiction.net called Face on a Train, or Just a Face on a Train, which is set after Spider-Man 2, the Sam Raimi films, where somebody who saw Peter Parker's face on the train meets him again, and it all butterfly effects out from there. It's actually really, really good, and that one's definitely worth reading.
Okay. All right, cool. All right, and let's see, your next couple questions here. These are from Danny, and his first one is to me, and he was listening to a previous episode and comments that I made about collector's editions and how, you know, I only buy a collector's edition if it has collectibles. So his question is, what is my favorite collector's edition that I have in my collection? And I would have to say right now that is my Japanese version of the Bayonetta Climax Edition for the Switch. And the reason why I got specifically the Japanese version, because it also was released in Europe and was about $100 cheaper. But the Japanese version is the only one that you can get that has a physical box release copy of Bayonetta 1. It was only ever released in other regions as a digital download. The only way that you can get a physical copy is in this box set from Japan. So that's why I bought that. And that's actually the second most expensive thing in my collection right now, is that box set. So it's got a place of honor up on my shelf. So I'd say right now that's my favorite collector's edition. Coming a very close second is actually the Xenoblade Chronicles 2 Special Edition, which I snatched up on sale last week off of Amazon. And I really love the stuff that came with that. I've discovered that I've got kind of a minor addiction to video game art books. At the same time I bought the special edition for Xenoblade Chronicles, for the Xenoblade 2 special edition, I got the Xenoblade 2 art book. And now I've got kind of a minor collection of art books on my bookshelf. So, but yeah, the Bayonetta Climax edition, that's my favorite collector's edition in my collection, so far. And, his second question here, it's addressed to me, but I'm going to open up to you, Skyblues, because you actually wrote an article about this. And his question is, what do I think of the announcement of a new Earthworm Jim game for the Intellivision Amico? So I'm going to go ahead and let you take point on this while I compose myself.
As Gonzo said, I did write an article about this for work. If you look on the website Only SP or Only Single Player and do a search for Earthworm Jim or Intellivision, it will come up. And I did a whole bunch of research about what the hell is going on with this thing. And what I really do not understand is why they're announcing this Earthworm Jim revival on a console that is very, very confused about what it is. Because the Intellivision Amico has been announced that it's going to have remastered versions of old Intellivision and Atari games on it. So your first thought is that it's going to be a classic console similar to things like the NES Classic and the the PlayStation, the PlayStation Mini, and so on and so forth. But they've also said that it's going to have new games on it, and they've also said, and this is the thing that really baffles me, none of the games will have a mature or adult rating. So it's all going to be teen or below. So it's not a console for adults, but they're putting all these retro games on it, which is going to be the sort of thing that appeals to adult retro collectors. And then they're putting on a revival of the game from the 90s, which doesn't fit in with the early 70s, 80s theme, on this console that's supposed to be for kids who won't recognize Earthworm Jim. I am very confused.
I, on the other hand, am very angry. Oh, Skyblaze will tell you. This gets my blood boiling. Harlan Ellison tasted less of his own bile in his throat when he saw Gene Roddenberry assault his script for City on the Edge of Forever than I taste looking at this case of complete and utter franchise abuse. Just everything about this console makes me mad. Like, oh, you have a 21st century 2D chip. Oh, I'm so happy for you. I'm so impressed that you're designing a console with off-the-wall components. Or even worse, a retooled Raspberry Pi. And like Skyblaze said, they have no idea who they're trying to sell themselves to. Absolutely none. They keep talking about how they were making a console for Intellivision fans, but then in their next breath, they go on about how they want to be an entry-level console and how none of their games are going to be rated higher than E10+. When the only people who remember Intellivision are older people who grew up with it, or people like me who collect retro shit like this. Enthusiast collectors, but like that's not the market that you market an entry level console to. You know who an entry level console is for? It's for parents. It's for people who are either looking for a Christmas gift for their kid or maybe want to tool around with some Need for Speed after work. But neither of those groups are going to do the research necessary to find this console in the back of Target's bargain bin section next to a mountain of unsold Ouyas. And you got Earthworm Jim, one of the most beloved 90s icons. On this console, you're banking on nostalgia, but it's the wrong kind of nostalgia. The Intellivision was long gone by the 90s. And it's like, no, I don't care that you got the original Earthworm Jim designers back. I don't care that your console's only going to cost $160. I'm not buying a whole new console just for one game that's wearing the rotted skin of a corpse nobody remembers. It's just, they don't know anything about what they're doing. And here's what really makes me mad about the whole Earthworm Jim thing specifically. Tommy Tallarico is the CEO of Intellivision now. Now, if that name sounds familiar, he's the guy who runs Video Games Live, the concert series. He was also the composer for the original Earthworm Jim games. So the whole reason he's bringing this franchise back that he was involved in is just to cash in on his own past glory. It's a cynical cash grab, and I hate everything about it. Oh, you're fishing for idiots, and Earthworm Jim is the literal worm on the hook. You're not putting forth any effort to sell yourself. You're not interested in making a quality product. You're just trotting out Earthworm Jim and making him dance like a Vegas stripper, hoping people throw you enough money that you can pay off Savage Henry and his pack of gangbangers before they break your legs for not being able to pay for your expensive cocaine habit. Ah!
So yeah, fuck those guys.
Do you have any opinions on this, Mike?
I think it's pretty fucking stupid to put that have that be unexclusive for the console. That's going to sell a few units, but it's going to get ported in like a year or two anyway. It's not going to be enough to make this thing move anything significant numbers wise. Like you just said, it's going to sit in the back of Target next to all the Ouyas and PlayStation Classics because no one's going to fucking know about it. They don't have the money for any effective marketing campaign. You're not going to see this thing roll out anything significant. Okay, maybe we'll see something at E3. Maybe you'll see something on YouTube and some YouTube influencers. You don't have the market penetration to be a super successful console. You just don't. You're a glorified Raspberry Pi. And ultimately, at the end of the day, who gives a shit?
Yeah, if I wanted a fucking Raspberry Pi, I'd buy another fucking Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, I mean, and $160, I mean, to quote my favorite movie of all time, well, whoopee fucking do. I can do a lot more with a Raspberry Pi for $160.
Yeah, the thing that really gets me, though, have you seen the bloody controllers they've put out for this thing?
Why are you keeping the vertical design layout? Why do they look like iPods from 2005? You're not Apple Intellivision now. Cut it out!
Do you think Gonzo's a bit angry about this situation?
I think he's gonna pop a vein, man.
Yeah, I know, right?
I could really go for some Raspberry Pi right now, though. Y'all keep talking about pie. I'm kind of hungry.
Well, before I have a stress-induced aneurysm, let's move on here. That's all the Ask a Geek questions that we have for this week. Thank you, as always, for sending them in. You can send them to us through the email at drgonzo@nerdofthethirdpower.com. We love getting your questions, love reading them on the air, so get your questions in. You just might get read on the air. And with that, now let's move on to a happier subject, something I've been very excited for. Just so happy to talk about Detective Pikachu. The movie that I'm just going to throw my cards on the table, I think has finally broken the video game movie curse. This is the movie that Ratchet and Clank was supposed to be. This is the video game movie that has taught me to love again. Because if you remember, I was just so heartbroken by that movie. But yeah, the Detective Pikachu, the new Ryan Reynolds movie with Ryan Reynolds as the titular Detective Pikachu, as a Department of Redundancy Department. So yeah, let's just start opening up the floor here with our general thoughts. So Skyblaze, let's start with you on this one. What are your general thoughts on Detective Pikachu?
See, I kind of went into this blind because I didn't even realize that it was an adaptation of a specific game. I thought it was just a generic Pokemon adaptation. I didn't even realize that there was a Detective Pikachu game first. So I've learned a thing. I thought it was great. I had a really good time watching it. It was just cute and fluffy, and it felt comforting.
Yeah, fair warning, most of this review is going to be like 80% us just squeeing over how cute X Pokemon was. So, like, you know, if seeing us melt into puddles of joy and adorableness is not your thing, then, you know, peace. We'll see you next week. All right, Mike, what about you? What did you think of a Detective Pikachu?
I haven't played the Detective Pikachu game. The last Pokemon game I played extensively was Pokemon Let's Go Eevee. Put 100 and something hours into that. But I watched the anime a lot as a kid. I saw almost all the Pokemon movies in theaters during their first runs. So going into this, I was, okay, can they make this world feel lived in? And for the next, 2 hours, I was so impressed. I was so happy when I heard there's a little jingle for the Pokemon News Network at one point, and it's the Pokemon theme song. I literally teared up and looked at my wife and went, oh my god, it's the song! And I was just so happy. Plus, my boy Psyduck, he came to play, and I was so happy.
All right, and Kat, what did you think of Detective Pikachu?
As somebody who has no investment in Pokemon at all, I never watched the show, really. I've only ever played, the Pokemon Go game and, haven't played it in quite a while. I wasn't even planning on seeing this in theater, except that one of my friends wanted to go see it. And I was like, okay, fine. And I was like, okay, as long as I get Pokemon, then I guess that's okay. And for me, that's what I got out of it, because I really enjoyed it until the third act. And then the third act whipped around and I'm like, oh yeah, this is a children's movie. And it got really cringy in some spots for me. And I didn't really enjoy the third act very much. But overall, I really liked the film, except for that part.
All right, well, I guess now this is the part where we'll start breaking the film down to its component pieces, starting with the plot. And at this point, we will sound our trademark Nerd of the Third Power spoiler alarm. That if you have not seen this movie, at this point, we will be discussing spoilers. So if you have not seen this film yet and plan to and want to see it without spoilers, abandon ship now. So as Skyblaze mentioned, this movie is based on the Detective Pikachu 3DS game, and the plot of this movie actually is pretty much the plot of the game itself. We open up on Tim Goodman, who is the son of a police detective, and he wanted to be an aspiring when he was younger. He wanted to be a Pokemon trainer, but for some reason that's elaborated on later in the film, he has turned against the idea of being a Pokemon trainer, doesn't like Pokemon at all, and he's become estranged from his father until he gets a call that his father was killed in a car accident. And so he goes to Rhyme City, city which is kind of like a sanctuary for humans and Pokemon living and working together, to try and find out what happened to his father. And while he's there, he meets up with his father Harry's partner Pokemon, the titular Detective Pikachu, who he discovers can actually speak English, and Tim is the only person who can understand him. And this Pikachu is convinced that Tim's father is still alive. And the two of them team up, somewhat reluctantly on Tim's part at first, to try and find Harry. So they discover this drug smuggling ring for a substance called R, which when Pokemon are exposed to it, they go into this berserk frenzy. And they follow this drug trail to a laboratory and they discover a laboratory that has been performing experiments on the legendary Pokemon Mewtwo. And there's a whole plot involving a mega tycoon who wants to use the R and Mewtwo's powers to merge humans and Pokemon together, believing that that is the next step in human and Pokemon evolution. And lots of funny moments, lots of action scenes, lots of fan service and Easter eggs. So that's pretty much the plot of the film. So let's just open this up. Birdman, what did you think of the plotting of this movie?
I thought it was a really good adaptation of the material. I thought it was really well paced. There wasn't any real slow parts. I wouldn't say it was as well paced as, say, Avengers Endgame was made 3 hours whip by. There were some slow parts in this, but nothing that felt significantly detrimental to the enjoyment of it. But thoroughly thought it was very well paced overall for a kid's movie, and considering how simple the plot was, I think it's more than enough to keep kids' attention held for like the 2 hours that it's on screen.
Okay, Skyblaze, what about you? What did you think of the plot of this film?
The plotting was fairly consistent, I thought. Everything was set up and paid off the way it should be. Yeah, it was simplistic, but it wasn't bad. It was just straightforward, and that's fine. Because you don't want too many twists and turns when you're having such a broad audience.
Okay. Well, for me, and I will fully admit that I'm coming at this from a total fanboy, I absolutely loved this movie story. Having played the game, actually played it myself, I felt like it was a really nice little distillation of the game story. Because this is actually based on the plot of the game, the Mewtwo bits and everything. So I thought it was a nice little condensation of the main story beats of the game. There were some bits where it's like, you know, okay, you could see the movie kind of really embraced the fact that it was a kid's movie. And, you know, I felt like the third act was a bit rushed. Felt like it kind of barreled on a little bit there at the end, kind of moved a little quicker than I would have liked. But I mean, as Skyblaze mentioned, you know, for a kid's movie, I could see this being something that they would enjoy. And I actually had a good time throughout the whole movie. Now, Kat, it seems like you're the odd one out here. So what were your issues with the plotting of the film?
I can't get over the fact that the big mystery was that Bill Nighy is trying to merge humans and Pokemon. This is like, okay, so first off, this comes at me like this is the plot of a cartoon. Like, it, like for very young kids, like that is such a weird, weird thing to make the plot of a family film. But the more I think about it, the more horrific it is. It's not something you should think too hard about, because when you think about it, it gets really, it's like a lot of body horror going on. Like, the idea that that Bill Nighy decided that the way to make humans better is to put their souls inside the body of Pokemon. They can't, like, talk and communicate. They can only see their own names. It's really messed up, guys. I'm, like, kind of horrified that that's where the movie went.
You know, I would be totally on board if we had David Lynch's Pokemon. I'm just saying. That would be fucking awesome. Like,
if you had the theme to Twin Peaks playing in the background instead of that peppy thing that sounded sort of like the Jurassic Park theme, then yeah, like this would take on a whole different thing. Like, I'm genuinely like just sort of like uncomfortable with that being what was going on. I have a problem with that sort of thing. It's like anything where somebody loses their body autonomy, it really makes me uncomfortable. And this was like a really dumb way to lose body autonomy. Like,
It kind of made sense in a deranged way. It kind of made sense though, because Bill Nighy's character, his body doesn't work properly. So having, you know, not only the phenomenal cosmic power of Mewtwo, but also the ability to move around and fly however he wanted, that kind of makes sense. And he's like, this is great, everyone should be like this.
Meanwhile, the guy with the Magikarp is like, no, I may have objections.
Right. It makes, like, a part of it just makes me so uncomfortable. It's like, it's against somebody. Everybody else in the entire movie had this done against their will to them. But then it was also super, like, stupid and cheesy because it's Pokemon. Like,
yeah, exactly. It's Pokemon.
So do you think it was like just that dissonance that this is something that ordinarily makes you uncomfortable, but it was kind of it was cheesy enough to fit with the mythos.
It felt too childish of a, like, it's either got to be for very young kids or like horror levels, and it feels like it shouldn't be in between. Like, my brain can't wrap its mind around that being like an in between. Because I think
that's fair.
Even like as a family film that has a lot of adult humor in it, that people should be like, that's not right.
All right, well, that's fair. So what were some moments of the film story that stood out to you? Some moments that you particularly enjoyed. I'll tell you, one of the things that I absolutely loved about this film going through it was all the Easter eggs and fan service for fans of the Pokemon series, and seeing some of the creative ways that Pokemon were utilized. Me and Skyblaze were actually talking about this the other morning, and I asked her what she thought of the scene in the Underground Fight Club where Loudreds were being used as stereo speakers.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool. It's like, yeah, that's awesome, and I bet DJs in that world save a tune on DJ kit, because proper DJ speakers are hella expensive. However, can you imagine the look on the Loudred's face when you approach them with an XLR cable?
Where does one plug that in?
Exactly.
Male or female end?
Oh, no.
Speaking of things that are horrifying when you think of them.
Body horror once again.
It pays not to think too hard about this film. That's all I'm saying, guys.
I want the David Lynch cut. I'm just saying.
Tony, we broke your wife!
I'm fine.
but there were so many things that in this movie that, like, it's hard for me to pick one thing that stood out to me, because so much of it was just like, it was just one continuous stream of joy to me. Skyblaze, what about you? What were some moments that stood out to you?
It's not really plot related, but one of the things that I kept noticing was how many remixes of music from the games there were in there. There was a remix of the battle music that was in the Fight Club bit, the Underground Fight Club bit. And they were still using it wasn't quite 8-bit, but kind of the lo-fi sounds. Which makes sense, because the guy who was doing the music was Henry Jackman, who also did the music for Wreck-It Ralph. And I really appreciated that. I thought that was very cool and very appropriate.
Okay. Birdman, what was the story moment that stood out to you?
Psyduck. The
bit where he's like, he blackmails Pikachu into giving him a foot rub.
I love that. It's like, come on, bring it in. Love that.
I'd like to hear the psychology of being strapped to a suit, strapped in a booster seat next to a bomb.
That was, I thought, was fantastic. I really liked the reporter character.
Lucy?
I thought she was great. I also liked the subtle nod to aliens when they're in the Mewtwo lab and the Greninjas have them all tied up with their tongues above them and you just see the drool on the floor. I thought that was cool. One thing, though, that pissed me off. This was a golden opportunity and they Suicide Squad this one. Do you remember how the Suicide Squad trailer had Bohemian Rhapsody?
Yeah.
Detective Pikachu had Holding Out for a Hero. That should have been in the final battle, that song. It was in Shrek 2. It was in Short Circuit 2. It should have been in Detective Pikachu. That song would have guaranteed charted on Billboard for at least 2 weeks if it had been in this movie.
Okay.
I promised you that. But, missed opportunity. But other than that... I'm trying to think of what else really stood out to me. Credits, the music, and then all the artwork that was from the manga. I thought that was pretty cool. I was very impressed with that.
All right. Oh, another thing.
I've just thought of another. That entire interrogation scene with Mr. Mime, especially yes. when he opens the invisible door and gets the invisible gasoline,
and then bumps his head on the way out,
and then drops the match, and the expression on Mr. Mime's face of "Oh fuck."
Somebody and then, I read somewhere that was like, good thing they cut away, otherwise they...
And going back to the subject of body horror, let's talk about that ditto.
Oh, fucking hell. Must we? Those eyes! Those eyes!
Catherine Newton is an absolute adorable cinnamon roll in this movie, but oh my god, seeing her with ditto eyes, I'm going to wake up screaming to that image for weeks.
That forever. No.
So, Kat, what were some story moments that you enjoyed in this film?
I loved everything about Mewtwo. Because what little I know about Mewtwo is it's sort of the more, in terms of story, Mewtwo is this more existential character who has, like, identity crisis, and it gets very, like, philosophical. And so I was going in going, okay, are they going to keep this a kid's movie, or are they going to bring a little bit of philosophicalness to the character? And I was pleased that there was some there, since that's all I know about the character. So that was cool. I liked that. I'm with Birdman in that I loved Lucy, the character, because she was insane. She really, really wants to be an ace reporter, like Carmen Sandiego spy kind of thing. And just her being overdramatic about everything made me so happy. I don't know why. Just the fact that she was like, okay, we're going to go in. We're going to go break into this place. I'm not even thinking about my own safety. We're just going to do it.
Well, I mean, we're talking about a woman who carries a Psyduck around on a backpack, so... Which, again, Psyduck gets a headache, explodes, kills us all.
I read a thing, it was in, I think it was on an online article or something, that apparently the actress who was playing Lucy had to carry, like, quite a lot of weight on her back.
Yeah.
A
40-pound backpack to sell the fact
Jesus.
That she was... Yeah. Now go back and watch that scene where they're running around on the giant Torterra and know that. Going back to what Kat said about Mewtwo, yeah, one of the worries that I had about Mewtwo was that they were going to just flanderize him into this kind of just, oh, kill all humans figure that he is so often represented as in fandom, but I like that they gave him, like, some depth to it, like, okay, yeah, he's pissed off at how he's been used by humans, but at the same time, he's also is realized through the actions of Harry and Tim that, you know, not all human beings are like that, and that it's not worth it to just go all kill everybody. So I like that they actually gave him a compassionate side to him. And I really thought that was a neat touch. So
also, when you see that entire scene where Harry's dying and Mewtwo says, your Pikachu's offered his body to help you. And that's like, it was so sweet. And all of the intentions that Pikachu has and how he feels about it are expressed purely through body language and a couple of Pika Pikas, and that was really nicely done. In fact, the body language that Pikachu expresses throughout the entire film was incredible.
Which I guess brings us to the next section of the film, and that's the cast. And can I just say that I was kind of not that Ryan Reynolds was going to be voicing Pikachu, but he knocked this one out of the park. Like, this is going to be up there with Deadpool as, like, his most famous roles.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Like, I think, just... Go ahead.
I think the casting for this movie pretty much was consistent all the way around. There wasn't one person who felt miscast or out of place. I mean, even Ken Watanabe felt in-universe. Like, nobody felt out of place in this movie. I think it was fantastic. Other than the fucking weird ditto, it was fantastic.
But the ditto was kind of like supposed to be Uncanny Valley in universe.
Well, that's getting into the presentation. I want to give a shout out to the two human leads, Justice Smith and Catherine Newton. who I you could tell just from their performances, they were having a lot of fun with this movie. Catherine especially seemed like she was just having an absolute blast with her role. And I love the energy that she brought to Lucy. Just that manic early college, I'm going to change the world energy.
It was something I said when we finished watching it to Tony and to Nova, who we went to go and see it with. It's like you can really tell that the cast are having entirely too much fun with this film.
Bill Nye has gone on record as saying he's been made into a huge Pokemon fan because of this movie. He's actually...
Oh yeah, I saw that. And his favorite Pokemon is Mew.
Kat, what did you think of the casting of this film?
I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed, like you said, both of the human performances. I just thought they were so spot on. I almost had a hard time buying them as adults because both of those actors look so young.
Well, I mean, they are. I think Catherine Newton's only, what, 21, if that?
I know, but they look like they're in their teens. And maybe it's because
just because you're old.
Well, obviously.
I'm going to back away slowly. I'm not involved.
Older. Yeah. Yeah, I'm really old. I'm ancient.
There.
I am ancient and forever burning at the heart of time and so on and so forth. Yeah, we know.
I definitely was like, oh, they're playing teenagers. And then I was like, oh, no, they're not. They're playing 20-somethings because they're 20-somethings. I'm so used to, like, 20-somethings playing teenagers. I think my brain is ruined for recognizing people's ages now.
Thanks, 90210.
But right? And Buffy? But, like, they had so much energy that I think even in my 20s I didn't have. They're just like, bam, bam, bam. Them both being awkward and weird in their own ways, I just thought they had really great chemistry. They were really fun to watch on scene together. And then of course, Ryan Reynolds. It was such an unusual thing to even conceive of would be this talking Pikachu, and what would a talking Pikachu sound like other than the Japanese actress? And there had been all that scare that, oh, what if Danny DeVito is playing Detective Pikachu, and imagine what we would have gotten versus what we got. And I'm so glad we got what we got.
Detective Pikachu is an entire river of snark throughout the entire thing.
I feel like Ryan Reynolds was responsible for a lot of his dialogue.
Yeah. To wonder how much of that was ad-lib.
Oh, the directors actually put out a thing that said that, look, Ryan Reynolds has ad-libbed so much over the course of this movie that we've got enough to make a whole R-rated, hour-long blooper reel out of the unused material.
Amazing. I would pay money for that.
And what I find is really funny about his performance is how the fandom has kind of run with it, that that Pikachu, because one of the things that really kind of stunned the fandom was that Pikachu actually curses in this movie. So now the running joke is that Pikachu now are all just foul-mouthed little shits. Just all we hear is Pika Pika. When what they're really saying is, oh, God, motherfucker, that hurt right in the cock. Jesus. Who sends me out? Who sends an electric type out against a Geodude? God, go to fucking school, dude. So now I will just forever imagine Ash's Pikachu, just every line of his mouth is just him cursing out his trainer. Like, how is it you've been at this for 20 years and you've never won a single championship? which Ash deserves because he's a goddamn scrub, but that's a discussion for another table. All right, so we've discussed the cast. Let's talk about the presentation of this film, and this is going to be the part where we just all just melt into piles of puddles of cute, because oh my god, the fucking Pokemon in this movie. Like, one of my fears going into this film was that the Pokemon were going to be all very Uncanny Valley, or that they were going to try and do like the Michael Bay Transformers thing where they'd be redesigned to be quote unquote realistic, or
Sonic
quote unquote.
Movie.
Yeah. Yeah, like that. God. But we actually get game accurate designs for the Pokemon, and they actually made them work within this movie. And I think the standout example that me and Skyblaze are both motorcycle, that me and Skyblaze are both kind of squeeing over was those goddamn Bulbasaur.
Oh my god, how cute were the Bulbasaurs?
The Squirtles too, man.
The Bulbasaurs looked exactly just like tiny versions of Toothless in How to Train Your Dragon, and I think that's like 90% of what I was like, okay, I'll go see this movie for Bulbasaur.
I want one. I want one of those Bulbasaur. I will take him home and I will hug him and pet him and water him and call him George.
I will move also, to the river.
The Growlithe and Snubbull that were being police dogs and such good boys.
Yes. Any good doggo that was just like trotting alongside its Pokemon partner, just like just trotting alongside, like very good doggos.
I've also really liked the Panchams that you see where they're, I can't remember what their evolved form is called, but the Panchams are crawling all over their evolved daddy, and one of them falls and the papa just catches him, and I just thought that was so adorable. One that that can go die in a bin though and never come out ever again is those fucking Aipom.
They were fine when they weren't hopped up on the drug. Just when they went feral, and it was like, oh god, no.
You never realize how important a nose is to a facial design until you see these pissed off Aipom.
You know...
The Greninja was fucking terrifying as well.
Yeah, but nothing beats out that Lickitung, though. Can we just discuss how horrifying that is? And the reality of what it would be like to just have something come up and lick you? No, thank you.
Just,
nope.
I think the Lickitung...
Personal space, dude.
I think the Lickitung actually beats out the Mr. Mime for the creepiest Pokemon in this movie.
Ooh, it's a tough call.
But yeah, speaking of which, Mr. Mime, let's talk about how that whole scene played out, because I absolutely loved how they animated that character and made him emote and actually played out that whole miming sequence. It was great. Just like Skyblaze said, the body language of the Pokemon in this movie is just phenomenal. And I can't wait until I can see the behind the scenes featurettes and how they did the mocap for these characters. Like Andy Serkis was in here somewhere. He had to have been. All right.
Also, even the Cubone, who are not that cute, were still like, they felt real. They felt like creatures that existed and were actually having an impact on the world. They didn't feel like they were floating above the world, which, if CGI is done badly, they can feel like that.
Yeah, they actually felt like they had weight and presence. Mm. And another one that scared the hell out of me was the fucking Gyarados. Like it always looks like kind of a mean motherfucker in the games, but to actually see it realized as it is in this film, like you could kind of see this thing being the inspiration for those old dragons in Japanese mythology, the inspiration for those mythological sea serpents, because that thing just looked fucking horrifying.
It looked cool though.
Yeah. It did look cool, and the Charizard just nopes out of there. He's like, oh crap, this is gonna suck.
Tim, I can't float. All right. What about you, Birdman? What did you think of the presentation of this film?
I thought all the Pokemon looked fantastic. Whenever they were on screen, they never felt weird or out of place. It felt like a lived-in world. That's the thing that worried me the most about this movie is, will the world feel genuine? Will it feel like Star Wars, where it's like a used future? Will it feel like Blade Runner, where we're supposed to believe in the cyberpunk future? Does it sell the universe? It stuck the landing. It really did. Like, Rhyme City feels real. They openly say, no battles, no trainers, no Pokeballs. Pokemon live in harmony with their partners here. And it felt like just a city with a lot of pets in it. It felt like a Pokemon world. And I didn't expect that. I didn't expect it to sell me so hard on the universe. First, it being fantastic and everything. But it felt like in Pokemon, there are insurance people. And you never question it. It's just like, okay. There you go. There are Squirtles working alongside a fire department, which is a great callback to an episode in the first season, the Squirtle Squad. That is awesome. I love that.
Okay.
Yeah, the world building was really nice because there are subtle things like that that if they're not there, you don't really notice, but the world doesn't feel as real.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Okay. Kat, what about you? What did you think of the presentation of this film?
I thought it was very nice. I didn't always buy the Pokemon 100% of the time as, like, being there, but overall, I really liked it. It all looked very good. I thought the Rhyme City itself was so spectacular looking. Because it had this sort of vague, you don't really know where this is supposed to be set kind of thing. You know, like, it's kind of vaguely Japanese, vaguely American, made up world. That honestly reminded me of, like, a fusion of San Francisco and Zootopia.
Mm.
Like, if these two places were the same thing, that's what Rhyme City would be. Because it's got all of these bright lights and neon, and then you've got all these animals everywhere.
Okay.
I really enjoyed it. I'd want to live in that world, for sure.
Just as long as you don't have to look at any Ditto. All right, well, we're kind of running short on time, so let's start wrapping things up by giving our final thoughts on the film. And I'm going to open up by saying that this is what I have wanted to see in a video game film for a very long time. So many video game films, they fall into this trap of trying to make the fantastic fit into the real world. And I was scared to death that they were going to, that if they made a Pokemon movie, they were going to do some stupid ass thing like, you know, oh, Pokemon came to our world through like a dimensional rift or the result of a genetic experiment, you know, that they were going to try and fit Pokemon into our world instead of actually committing to the premise and having faith enough in the IP and in the world to actually tell a story within this fantasy universe. And I in hindsight, I really shouldn't have worried all that much, because if there's one company that is going to have faith in its intellectual property to let it stand on its own and actually commit to telling stories in these worlds, it is Nintendo. And it warms my heart to finally see a video game movie that is actually legitimately good. Is it an Oscar winner? No. Is it the greatest film ever made? No. But it's a film that knows what it is and commits to it and revels in it. And I am absolutely overjoyed to see this movie. And it will be a nice, the Blu-ray set will be a nice palate cleanser when the Sonic film comes out, which does everything that I was afraid this movie was going to do. So, Skyblaze, what about you? Final thoughts on Detective Pikachu?
As I say, it's not Oscar material, but it's not trying to be. It's trying to be something warm and thing and sweet, and that's fine, and it does that really well. And it is the sort of film that you'll put on if you've had a bad day. You know, you come home from a crap day and you're like, I need something to cheer me up, I'm going to put the Detective Pikachu on, because it's that sort of a film.
All right, Birdman, what about you?
I didn't think a live-action Pokemon movie would ever work. I'm glad to say that I was proven wrong.
Okay, Kat? Final thoughts.
Overall, really enjoyed it. Very, very cute movie. I would definitely watch it again. So, so cute. Very cute.
Yes. Alrighty. And so with that, this is the part of the show where we give our final ratings on the film. As always, ratings best to worst are see it now, wait for matinee, wait for DVD, wait for cable, don't even bother, and Brian's rating, fuck this movie. So, I'm going to go ahead and go first and say, I'm going to say, if you are a Pokemon fan, this is definitely a see it now film. This is a movie that is for the fans. This isn't one of those Hollywood, oh, we have to appease the general audience crap fest. This is a movie for Pokemon fans. And if you are a Pokemon fan, you owe it to yourself to see this movie. So that's going to be my rating. See it now. Birdman, what about you?
I'm going to say go see this with a matinee, because it is accessible enough for general audiences that you'll get the hang of Pokemon pretty quickly. If you're a Pokemon fan, you'll get a lot more out of it. And depending on the audience you see it with, it's a totally different experience. I saw this with a group of older people and older Pokemon fans and some younger ones too. And everybody had the same joys and the same highs and low lows during this movie, and it was fantastic. So see it on a matinee if you're a general fan. If you're a super fan, you've already seen this movie like twice now, so go see it.
Okay. Skyblaze, what about you?
If you're a Pokemon fan, definitely go and see it at the cinema. Ideally go and see it with friends, because that does make a difference. If you're not such a huge Pokemon fan, maybe wait for it to come out on DVD or see if it's on cable. If you get the chance to watch it, even if you're not a huge Pokemon fan, you should, because it's cute and it's fun, and there's nothing wrong with that. And if you're in the mood for something cute and fun, then definitely give it a try.
Okay. And Kat, what about you? Final thoughts?
I would say go see a matinee, unless you're a super fan, and then which, like Birdman said, you've already seen it twice. It is very cute. It is, though, as I have cautioned, it is a family film, bordering on a kid's film at some time, so there are a lot of elements that are not meant for everybody. So that was a warning that I got when going into the film, and it definitely made it a little bit easier for me to deal with the parts that I didn't like, was to just know that not every moment of the film is made for me. Some of it is made for the other people in the audience. So with that in mind, yeah, just go pick it up on a matinee, or again, super cute film. Just go see it. It's cute.
Alrighty. And with that, that is all the time that we have for Nerd of the Third Power this week. Thank you as always for tuning in. Tune in next week where we are discussing, finally, I don't understand why it took us so long to get to this topic, but next week we are discussing Dungeons and Dragons. Going to be a really fun show. And so, we will see you guys next week. Thank you as always for tuning in. As always, I'm Dr. Gonzo.
I'm the Cat.
I'm Skyblaze.
I'm Mike the Birdman Dodd!
We will see you next week. Taka, play us out.